This is VOA News. I'm Tommy McNeil. Iranian police have denied using live ammunition against protesters in Tehran who have been demonstrating since Saturday against the government's attempt to cover up its downing of a Ukrainian passenger plane. Protesters in Tehran and other Iranian cities continue to demand accountability for the deaths of 82 Iranian citizens who were among 176 people killed in a crash. VOA's Lattice Ahok reports.
Some protesters pulled down banners depicting the slain Iranian general Qasem Soleimani. Police in riot gear moved to disperse them. A spokeswoman for the State Department told VOA Persian Service that U.S. President Donald Trump and Secretary of State Mike Pompeo have been tweeting messages of support to the Iranian people. Officials in Washington have warned Iranian authorities against killing and arresting peaceful protesters. The head of police in Tehran said officers have not opened fire on protesters and have been instructed to act with restraint. Zlatica Hope, VOA News, Washington.
And United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres said the reports of the lethal use of force against demonstrations or demonstrators must be fully investigated. A close associate of Rudy Giuliani, President Trump's personal lawyer, provided text messages and photos to the House committee leading the impeachment inquiry.
Joseph Bondi is the lawyer for Lev Parnas, who was deeply involved in efforts by Giuliani to press Ukraine to open an investigation into Joe Biden and Biden's son. Bondi tweeted they worked through the night to get data from two of his clients' smartphones to the House Intelligence Committee. President Trump has already been impeached in the House, but Chair Adam Schiff says the committee is still working to gather information leading up to the president's trial in the Senate. Bondi's tweets include a photo of Parnas posing with President Trump, both smiling and giving a thumbs up with the hashtag #LetLevSpeak. Ed Donahue, Washington.
This is VOA News. Russia says a good progress has been made in talks in Moscow over a ceasefire in Libya, but a breakthrough deal has yet to be signed between the rival forces. Russia, which supports strongman Khalifa Haftar in the east of the country, helped broker a ceasefire alongside Turkey, which plans to deploy troops to defend Haftar's rival, the United Nations-backed government of National Accord based in Tripoli. Libya's divisions remain stark. Its rival administrations, heavily armed and each backed by an increasing number of foreign powers. The governor of Arkansas defends his decision to accept new refugees. AP correspondent Mike Rossi explains.
Republican Governor Asa Hutchinson of Arkansas went before a panel of state GOP lawmakers Monday to defend his decision to continue accepting new refugees. Hutchinson told the lawmakers fewer than 50 refugees are likely to be resettled in Washington County under his decision. Arkansas is one of 42 states that have said they will continue to accept refugees in the wake of a Trump administration order issued last September, giving state and local governments the authority of refusal. On Friday, Republican Governor Greg Abbott of Texas said his state will be the first under Trump's order to no longer accept new refugees. I'm Mike Gracia.
Democratic presidential candidates meet for a critical debate Tuesday in Iowa, less than 3 weeks before Iowa voters kick off the presidential nomination process on February 3rd. A total of six Democratic contenders will be on stage with signs of growing tensions among some of the candidates. VOA national correspondent Jim Malone reports.
Among those on stage Tuesday will be the current Democratic frontrunner in national polls, former Vice President Joe Biden. Biden faces a strong challenge in early voting states like Iowa and New Hampshire, especially from Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders. Tensions are on the rise between Sanders and some of the other contenders, including Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren. Another strong contender in the early voting states is former South Bend, Indiana Mayor Pete Buttigieg. Former New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg has not qualified for the debates, but he has moved up in the polls after a massive television ad blitz in hopes of competing in primaries in March. Jim Malone, VOA News, Washington.
A U.S. cybersecurity company says Russian military agents successfully hacked the Ukrainian gas company at the center of the scandal that led to President Donald Trump's impeachment. Russian agents launched a phishing campaign in early November aimed at stealing the login credentials for employees at the gas company. According to Area 1 Security, Hunter Biden, son of former U.S. Vice President and Democratic presidential hopeful Joe Biden, previously served on the board. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Tuesday, January 14th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Calls are mounting for Lesotho Prime Minister Thomas Thabane to step down.
It is quite obvious that the Prime Minister is a suspect in a horrendous criminal matter that involves his estranged wife. But most importantly, in the actions that he took against Commissioner Mudibedi.
Nkosa Mahao is the deputy leader of Lesotho's ruling All Basotho Convention Party. Malawi's main opposition MCP denies allegations of attempted bribery of judges. Russia says good progress has been made over a ceasefire in Libya. And anti-government protesters in Guinea denied government accusations of wanton violence during Monday's protests.
We are not going to use any violence, but we are going to resist and prevent anybody from changing the constitution just to have the third term again in this country.
Fayemi Limono is a member of the National Front for the Defense of the Constitution. Cameroon charities fight Boko Haram recruitment with job training, and a doping trial involving a former world athletics chief adjourns after opening in Paris. Those stories and more coming up on Daybreak Africa. A political storm is once more brewing in the tiny state of Lesotho in southern Africa, with calls mounting on Prime Minister Thomas Thabane to step down. This after police investigation revealed that a mobile phone linked to Thabane or his residence had contacts with a person who was at the crime scene where Thabane's estranged wife was shot dead in 2017. As Tom Tuso Kumalo reports from Johannesburg, the standoff is threatening the Lesotho's fragile peace.
The call for Thabane to step down comes after police obtained a warrant of arrest for his second wife, Ma Esaya Thabane, who is currently on the run. A police report compiled with the help of the South African police revealed that her mobile phone was used to call a person who was at the crime scene where Thabane's first wife, Lipolelo Thabane, was shot dead just before her husband's inauguration in 2017. Thabane had suspended the Commissioner of Police, Holomo Molibeli, soon after the warrant of arrest for his wife surfaced, but the courts dismissed the suspension. Now a faction of his ruling All Basotho Convention, ABC party, is demanding that he steps down. Nkosa Mahao is the ABC's deputy leader.
It is quite obvious that the Prime Minister is a suspect in a horrendous criminal matter that involves his estranged wife. But most importantly, in the actions that he took against Commissioner Mudibedi, this was an attempt to defeat the ends of justice.
And Molibeli, who is back at work, is vowing to pursue those linked to Lipolelo's death.
We have to proceed not later than now because this was just a delay, but we don't allow ourselves to be delayed. We now have time to go on with our responsibilities. It is our responsibilities. People want to know what actually happened, so we cannot run away from that.
It has also surfaced that the Prime Minister sent State House police to force Molibeli out of his office, an action which nearly ignited a shootout within the police force. This was after the Commissioner had sent police to the State House with a warrant to arrest Thabane's second wife, Ma Esaya, an action which also was resisted by the State House security. Mahao says Thabane is now a security threat to the stability of the country.
We came very close to a physical clash occurring at the police headquarters between factions of the Lesotho Mounted Police Service.
With the tiny kingdom sinking deeper into political and economic crisis, South African Minister of Finance Tito Mboweni tweeted that incorporating Lesotho into South Africa could be the only way out. Although this is not South Africa's official position, many Twitter users agreed with him. The Lesotho government is still being assisted by the Southern African Development Community envoys after a clash between the police and the army in 2014 almost plunged the country into civil war. According to the World Bank, nearly half of Lesotho's 2 million people are living in poverty, and many have blamed the political tensions for it. Tuso Kumalo for VOA News, Johannesburg.
The main opposition Malawi Congress Party, the MCP, has denied involvement in alleged attempt to bribe judges who are expected to rule in the case of the disputed presidential election. MCP spokesperson Maurice Mtale says the Malawi Anti-Corruption Bureau should thoroughly investigate the allegation and prosecute the perpetrators. His remarks came after the anti-graft agency said it has launched an investigation into persons who allegedly attempted to bribe the judges. The MCP and the United Transformation Movement, UTM Party, challenged the results of the 2019 presidential poll, citing voter irregularities and rigging. MCP spokesperson Maurice Mutale tells viewers Peter Clotty that the law must deal with the masterminds of the attempted bribery.
This, in the first place, is a very sad story. In fact, it is shameful in its nature, because the judiciary is supposed to be a very independent institution. And in Malawi, that is what we believe they are. And for any person to even think about bribing the judges, that is very unfortunate and very shameful indeed. And it is regrettable. We condemn this, as well as asking the Anti-Corruption Bureau to probe into this matter and bring all those that are behind this alleged bribery book.
The Anti-Corruption Bureau said it had names of the people who allegedly attempted to bribe the judges. Some are saying that the MCP, your party, is desperate for power and will do everything despite challenging the outcome of the presidential election in court, and that you are to blame for attempting to bribe the judges. What is your reaction to that?
There's nothing of that sort in the Malawi Congress Party. What we know is we went to the Constitutional Court to seek justice, and justice cannot come by bribing. We want to believe that the names that the Anti-Corruption Bureau is keeping have to be known by the general public, so that justice must be seen to prevail and the truth must be seen in all this. We want to commend the Chief Justice who went to report to the Anti-Corruption Bureau. And we also want to commend our judges for being so firm and so independent and having to report the issue to their head.
Some Malawians are saying that supporters of the MCP have been joining HRDC, the political pressure group, organizing series of demonstrations demanding the ouster of the chairperson of the Malawi Electoral Commission, Dr. Justice Jane Ansah. They said the mere fact that your supporters are joining in, despite the fact that you are challenging the outcome of the presidential election in court, is a strong indication that some of your members might be behind this attempted bribery.
As far as I am concerned, as spokesperson of the Malawi Congress Party, there is nothing of that sort in our party. And we want to suspect that it should be somebody else outside our party, because all we know is that we are seeking justice from the courts of law. The only desperation that somebody can point at is when we went to the seeking justice. If that is desperation, then call it that name. Otherwise, Malawi Congress Party is out of this. We have our hands clean. And we are in the same vein, wanting the issue be probed expeditiously and professionally.
Maurice Mutale is the spokesperson for the opposition Malawi Congress Party. He was speaking with viewers Peter Clotty from Mzuzu, Malawi. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on The Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Tuesday, January 14. Daybreak Africa time, 14 minutes past the hour. Anti-government protesters in Guinea are denying government accusations of wanton violence during Monday's protest against a likely third-term bid by President Alpha Condé. In a statement Monday, Guinea's Ministry of Security and Emergency Preparedness accused the National Front for the Defense of the Constitution of engaging in violence in parts of Conakry and the interior of the country. The communique said protesters erected barricades, dumped oil on roads, and threw stones zones are private and public property. Faya Milimono is a member of the National Front for the Defense of the Constitution. He says the protesters will not use violence, but will do everything necessary to prevent President Alpha Conde from changing the constitution to have a third term.
The protest on Monday was by the people. We have noticed that people have listened to FNDC and people have followed the instructions. We have lost three people killed by police forces, two in Conakry and one in Labe.
The Government Ministry of Security and Emergency Preparedness accused you, the protesters, of disturbing the public order through the erection of barricades, dumping of oil on public roads, and stone throwing on the public and private goods. How do you respond to that?
We know that the government has lost the legitimacy and they're trying to portray the opposition as being violent. The fight that we've been going through, we cannot use violence. I learned that when you're fighting a dictator, you don't use three things. First, don't use violence. Otherwise, you play on his ground. He's going to be the winner. The second thing, don't negotiate with him. He's going to buy time. And the third thing, don't go with him to elections. He's going to all the time win. So those basically are the principles that have been guiding the opposition here in Guinea. We want to prevent this country from going back to the 2000s. We remember, the constitution has been manipulated in 2001 during National Congress time. We went bankrupt and about 600 young people were killed here in Conakry. We don't want to go to that, and that's why we are going to demonstrate to prevent any manipulation of the constitution to allow anybody to have a third term again in Guinea.
The government says that your protesters attacked the seat of the governor in the commune of Labe. If these allegations are true, do they indicate that maybe you have changed the level of your protest from now on?
We haven't changed any level of demonstrations. What happened in Labe? They have used the army. They took the army to the streets. The army is prepared for war. So when you take the army to the streets, you cannot avoid any violence, because army is made to produce violence. And that's why we are actually seeing some violence on that side.
Before, it was that you were having, what, peaceful demonstrations? Where are we going now in Guinea?
We are going to continue the peaceful demonstrations. Our goal is clear. We have said it, and we are repeating it. We are not going to use any violence, but we are going to resist and prevent anybody from changing the constitution just to have a third term again in this country.
Faya Milimono is a member of the National Front for the Defense of the Constitution. You're speaking with us from Guinea's capital, Conakry. Russia says a good progress has been made in talks in Moscow over a ceasefire in Libya, but a breakthrough deal has yet to be signed between the rival forces. Russia, which supports strongman Khalifa Haftar in the east of the country, helped broker a ceasefire alongside Turkey, which plans to deploy troops to defend Khalifa's rival, the United Nations-backed Government of National Accord, based in Tripoli. As Henry Richwell reports, more foreign powers are getting involved in the conflict, and there is a danger the intervention could backfire.
Libya's divisions remain stark, its rival administrations heavily armed and each backed by an increasing number of foreign powers. In the east, strongman Khalifa Haftar's forces are cementing their grip on the coastal city of Sirte, which they captured a week ago. Haftar launched an offensive last April against the Tripoli-based UN-backed Government of National Accord under Prime Minister Fayez Sarraj. But there are renewed hopes for peace. The two sides agreed a ceasefire beginning Sunday. For Ankara, the intervention is about regional preeminence, says analyst Claudia Gazzini of the International Crisis Group, who spoke to VOA via Skype.
They want to, of course, avoid a full triumphant march in of Haftar and his forces into Tripoli and a political reset that would be completely in favor of Haftar, which by extension would mean in favor of the Egyptian, Emirati, Saudi worldview, countries with which Ankara has already difficult relations.
Gazzini says Turkey also hopes to shore up a deal struck with the Tripoli government that reportedly outlines maritime boundaries in the Mediterranean,
which Turkey hopes to use to foil attempts by Egypt, Israel, Cyprus and Greece to export gas from the eastern Mediterranean to Europe.
Haftar's forces have denounced Ankara's intervention as a Turkish occupation. Gazzini says there is a risk that Turkey's intervention makes peace less likely,
whereby Turkey offers support to the Tripoli-based government. And this actually enables the Tripoli-based government and the multiple political and military figures around it to adopt a more hardline, uncompromising position, refusing negotiations or refusing a ceasefire.
For now, the ceasefire appears to be holding. Russian, Turkish and Libyan officials from both factions met in Moscow Monday. And Berlin has announced plans to host a Libya peace conference later this month. Turkey's President Recep Tayyip Erdogan insisted Monday his intervention is aimed at securing a resolution. Peace has eluded Libya since the overthrow of Colonel Muammar Gaddafi in 2011. While efforts towards a resolution move forward, analysts warn there is a danger that more foreign intervention could simply entrench divisions. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
The terrorist group Boko Haram has exploited high unemployment to recruit new fighters in Cameroon along the Nigerian border. To counter these efforts, some charity groups are offering training for unemployed youth to help them start their own businesses. Moki Edwin Kinzeka has this report prepared by Anne Unzuaku in Amchede, Cameroon.
20-year-old Barzare Umar says members of the Nigerian jihadist group Boko Haram attacked her village Amchede 2 years ago. They killed her mother and tried to recruit her. Barzai says Boko Haram members came to the neighborhood and told people that if they join them, they will give them money to go and work with them. Some of the unemployed Cameroonian youth in her village joined Boko Haram, but Omar refused. She had just started a job training program and says the hope of steady income gave her courage to reject the terrorist group. Analysts say Boko Haram's attacks on villages along Nigeria's border have crippled the local economy, increasing joblessness and making it easier for the militants to recruit. But charity groups like the Catholic Mission of Marwa are fighting back with job training centers for locals. Albert Daddy is a guide at the mission-funded Ozal Professional Training and Recycling Center. He says this schooling helps all of them. He says it encourages them to stay in the village. This is our village, says Daddy. We cannot leave our village to go into the bush. He says with this work, we can buy food and medicine. Cameroonian security expert Ntuda Ebode applauds the program's goal, but says they should be moved away from the border until the area is secured. He says it's not good to train them and leave them there in a context where recruitments continue. Ebode says the distance to move from one country to another is too little. He says there is always a high risk that the trainees will find themselves caught again, either as a hostage or as a voluntary recruit. But charity coordinators maintain that improving the local economies is a major deterrent for Boko Haram's recruitment efforts and requires creating jobs locally. Local leaders agree and say they want to see more programs for skills training and job placement. Simon Awadak is president of the Association of Dynamic Young People for Development.
He says they feel that charities have made efforts, but it is very low, both in terms of the selection process and the employment creation. Over 400 villagers have so far received the job training since programs began in 2017 in Cameroon's far north region. For Anne Zwanke in Amchide, Cameroon, Moki, Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News.
A Paris corruption trial against a once powerful figure in world sports opened on Monday but was quickly adjourned. From the French capital, Lisa Bryan reports on the case against Lamy Jacques, the Senegalese former head of World Athletics governing body, and five others.
The trial against 86-year-old Lamine Diack has been adjourned until June, following new documents from Senegal concerning testimony from Diack's son and co-defendant. Diack faces up to 10 years in jail and a heavy fine if found guilty for corruption and money laundering following a four-year French investigation. He is accused of accepting millions of dollars in bribes to cover up tests showing extensive doping by Russian athletes during his 16 years as head of the International Association of Athletics Federation, or IAAF, now known as World Athletics. A former mayor of Dakar, Diack is under house arrest in Paris. He denies the charges, as do five other defendants. Among other charges, the prosecution claims Diack received more than $1.5 million in Russian funds to help support his friend Macky Sall's successful 2012 presidential campaign in Senegal. In a 2015 BBC interview, he denied allegations of bribery or extortion or an IAAF cover-up.
I'm convinced I know what was is my department. I know how they work very, very hard about the fight against doping, and I didn't see any reason to make a cover-up of a doping case.
Britain's Sebastian Coe replaced Diack as the association's head later that year. The scandal the trial centers on led to a ban against Russian athletes in several international competitions. Russia, as a country, is still banned from competing in world athletics. One of Diack's sons, Papa Massata Diack, who handled lucrative IAAF contracts, was also to be tried in absentia. He is in Senegal, where authorities have refused to extradite him despite international arrest warrants.
Les enquêteurs français, ils doivent, je pense, faire un effort.
Papa Massata Diack earlier told France's TV5 Monde that French investigators should have made an effort to fly to Dakar and question him there. He was questioned by Senegalese investigators in November. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Anti-government protesters in Guinea are denying government accusations of wanton violence during Monday's protest against a likely third term by President Alpha Condé. In a statement Monday, Guinea's Ministry of Security and Emergency Preparedness accused the National Front for the Defense of the Constitution of engaging in violence in parts of Conakry and the interior of the country. Fayyami Limounu, a member of the National Front for the Defense of the Constitution, says the protesters will not use violence, but will do everything necessary to prevent President Alpha Condé from changing the constitution to have a third term. A political storm is once more brewing in the tiny state of Lesotho in southern Africa, with calls mounting on Prime Minister Thomas Thabane to step down. This after police investigation revealed that a mobile phone linked to Thabane or his residence had contacts with a person who was at the crime scene where Thabane's estranged wife was shot dead in 2017. And that is it for this Tuesday, January 14th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I'm James Botti in Washington, wishing you a very, very good day.
Want to relax, unwind, or charge up? Then listen to Music Time in Africa this weekend. It'll do all that for you and more. Heather Maxwell. I know good music, and Africa is my passion. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for 1 hour of commercial-free, Pan-African music of the highest caliber. You get great music, music news, and amazing artist interviews from rising stars to superstars. This listen will take you places. So do it. Join me for Music Time in Africa, your weekend destination.